teaching. You continued to teach in the girls' school after your marriage then?
No, in the boys' school. I did do a little teaching at the girls' school when my husband was gone. I'd take his classes there. He had a class or two there from time to time. But that's all. I never really taught there after that.
And you were teaching English primarily then? Or were you also teaching?
English. I taught Bible. That first year I taught everything. I taught a course in hygiene for the girls. History and English. I had 13 hours of teaching with them. With one class, I just about spent my time with them.
Now, were you the only Westerner in this town, or were there other...
No, there were a lot of Westerners, a lot of people who had lived in the United States, too, and come back. We always had, the principal at that time of the girls' school was an American, and we had people at the at our mission house at the meeting, and... We usually had a few American or English teachers on our staff. We had quite a staff.
What were your plans then for your future after you'd gotten married? Did you feel have any direction at that point?
Oh, I was so excited about helping Khalil to carry out this program of education. And... He was as interested in educating the girls as he was the boys, and he did as much for the girls' school as he did the boys' school. He raised money in the United States and built five beautiful buildings over there on the campuses. And a home economics house for the girls, and a classroom building. Story. And the whole, we were one community, although we were a mile apart, the two schools.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, we had a community within ourselves, the schools and the teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And there were other Americans and British people and other very fine, educated Arab people.
Now, the reason for the two schools was because of the Muslim culture, the need to separate the girls and boys? Or?
Well, you see, when the girls' school was started first, because at that time there were no schools for girls, at the time the girls' school was started.
When was that?
That was in 18... 60s something. 18, I think the first visit of those people was in 1865 or 67, and it was shortly after that, because they were asked by the people if they wouldn't start a school for girls. This was a Christian community, but not friends. The friends were just visiting there, and they were asked to start a school for girls. They had some schools for boys in town, church schools, Greek Orthodox, and Latin maybe, but nothing for the girls. And it wasn't for quite a few years that they started the boys' school also, because they began to see how good the education was for girls, and they wanted their boys to have an education like that too. And so the boys' school was started in 1901. And that is where the starting of these schools was, at the beginning of Friends' work there. And that is where Khalil came to be a friend, because his family and about seven other families went over from the Orthodox Church, the Greek Orthodox Church, to the friends, and that and started a little friends meeting.
Mm.
And it's still a small meeting.
Mm. Now, were the classes taught in Arabic or in English?
Both. The English and Arabic were taught throughout. But in the elementary classes, up to a certain point, up to the sixth grade perhaps, the instruction was given in Arabic, but they were taught English.
Mm-hmm.
And then the English took over. In the secondary school, instruction was all given in English. But they continued to study Arabic.
Now, when you went over there, did you know Arabic or you learned it there?
No, I didn't know Arabic when I went over, and I know very little now.
No. So you never did teach in Arabic at all?
No. Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
I was supposed to speak English with the youngsters because they came to learn English,
mm-hmm.
you see.
I see.
And that's one reason. I learned a good bit of the Arabic I speak from a Muslim woman. She had three sons in our school, and her husband was president of the Supreme Muslim Council. And she was Turkish. She spoke Turkish and Arabic. Her Arabic wasn't so good.
Oh.
But anyhow, we communicated in Arabic and English. And when they moved from Ramallah, they gave us some of these plaques, which are replacements for the Mosque of Omar, you know.
Oh. Those are lovely.
So I have several of these.
Now,
I don't know what to do with these things. I've got rid of a lot of things, but I still have to get rid of some things.
Now, at the time that you, after your marriage, then you, at that point, pretty well expected to stay in Palestine.
We expected to stay in Palestine until, it was during the war. My husband's health wasn't very good. And we left in 44.
Oh, before the division then?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We intended to go back and left our things very poorly packed. And then they were sent to us. And many things were broken because cooks packed them and they didn't do a very good job. No, we had planned to retire there,
mm-hmm.
really.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a little farm there down near Gaza. And I don't know what the status of it is now.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter, Sybil, my oldest daughter, married a Jewish young man from Boston. She lives in Boston. And he is interested in the status of that farm. And I think he is taking steps to see what it is. It was a 12-acre orange, full-bearing orange grove.
Now, you had that when you left it, in other words.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Now, you left primarily because of your husband's health, then, rather than because of the war
situation?
And
for the education of the children. But, of course, as things go now, after we got here, my husband headed the Institute of Arab American Affairs in New York for 5 years, and we lived in New Jersey. My children went to boarding school, friends' boarding schools in New England.
Did you continue any career then at that
time? I got interested in the League of Women Voters, first thing. And I was active in that
mm-hmm.
there. And so when I came to Whittier, that's the first organization I looked up.
Mm. But you were no longer teaching or anything?
not when I was in New Jersey,
mm-hmm.
no. I was active in two things there. I was active in the League of Women Voters and in another group that met weekly to sell for the war, you know, for the relief abroad and discussion. And it was a very broad group. I really felt very hungry for thought, for new development of thought, and I got it in that group. And I got about government, because, you know, you have to keep up on that. And I enjoyed that League of Women Voters very much.
How did you, were you teaching the entire time and you were in Palestine as your children were growing up,
yes.
Or did you stop?
No, I continued my activity.
Well, how did you feel about giving up a career then, in a sense, when you came back to this country?
I didn't feel that I was giving up a career. I felt that it was a wonderful career.
Mm-hmm.
My husband was very liberal. And he was so kind and so understanding, and he always thought first of me. And I didn't feel put down at all. I had everything I wanted and needed, and he took the responsibility, and I got to do the things I love to do. I love to do the dramatic work with the children. I did a lot with flowers. We had flowers, you know, to grow and beautify the place. And with my own children, of course. I went ahead a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I was given all freedom to do anything I wanted.
So after you left Palestine, though, you didn't continue teaching?
No.
At all?
No, I didn't teach at all until I got to Whittier. Those 5 years back there, I didn't do any teaching.
And then you came in 1950 or so to California?
Yes. When you came back, of course, I had to housekeep. I didn't have to do any housekeeping over there. But I had to keep house.
Mm-hmm.
And so it didn't leave me so much freedom.
How old were your children then?
The oldest was, the boy was 15, and the others were 13 and 9. And the two older ones were in boarding school, and I had the 9-year-old with us. So, you had to get used to a whole new system of education, and had to go to parents' conferences and that sort of thing with your child. I went up to my son's school. He was playing in the orchestra, the violin. He was the concert master in the three-school orchestra there in Providence. And I was invited up by the principal of the school, his wife, to come and spend the weekend and attend the concert, which I did, and it was lovely. So, the children have all gone into professions. Sybil is a musician, and my son is a musician, and my youngest one up in San Francisco, Berkeley area, is in art in high school. She's head of the department in art. And she has two nice girls, and they come more often to see me. I know them better than my other grandchildren.
When did you come out to California then?
When my husband finished his work with the Institute for Urban American Affairs.
And then what was he going to do out here? Did he have a position?
Well, he came to retire.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote and spoke a good deal. He wrote in 54, I think it was. And he was working on another one, and he passed away, and that was on how the country of Palestine today illustrates the Bible. And I was so interested in that, especially the part about the social life and customs, that I thought I'd go on and finish it. And I did go on and work it up. And then my eyes got so bad that I had to drop it. And then the situation changed so much over there that I felt that I needed more orientation.
Have you ever gone back?
Yes, I've been back a couple of times. I was back in 69. No, 59 and 64.
Mm-hmm. So that was after almost a 15-year absence?
Yes.
Now, was it to that same town that you had been living in that you went back?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was a great, great difference. The town where I lived was very different. As I say, there was the influx of this 60,000 refugees, the building of several unrest schools about for teachers, and everything was so crowded. There were such crowds every place. You'd go down the street and you'd never see anybody you knew.
So it also became more of a Muslim community then, too, I imagine.
It is, of course. I think that mostly, you see, the Christians were better educated because there were a number of Christian missions that came. Bishop Gobat School and St. George's School. They were Episcopalian. And there were other mission schools. It was a Catholic school. I've forgotten the name of it. There were about 13 secondary schools. They were very good over the country. They had an annual sports day, which my husband started. He started that when he was head of the government teacher training college in Jerusalem. He was head of that for 7 years before he took his doctorate and went to Ramallah, which is going back to his home.
What was the situation of women then at that time when you went back?
Well, I don't know that I saw much difference in that. I think that you'll see the status of women under Islam more in the villages. Although, I suppose you would, you know, this screen of mine reminds me of this book, because this is a harem screen, and this would be in a great, probably arched doorway, and the women of the harem could look through that little, place there, you see? They could see perfectly well, but it couldn't be seen. And that's the only way they could see the men that would come to their house in a Muslim family, like the Saudi Arabian. And in this Muslim family that I visited, there were four boys, all university educated. And the older daughter, who was blind, not totally blind, but to all purposes, and another one that had been married and had five children, and she decided she wanted an education. So she divorced her husband and went back to school and got her education. And then she remarried her husband. And her younger sister, Sapilla, which is the one that was in my family that I had charge of, went on to the AUB in Beirut and got her degree and went to teach in Iraq. And she married a young Iraqi teacher there. And after her children were educated, they came to the United States. She and her daughter got their degrees at the same time. She got her MA, and her daughter got her AB in, I don't know whether it was in Boston or New York. I wasn't in the East at that time. It's after we came west here, or I would have seen her. She was a fine girl, and that was a remarkable family. And those boys loved their sisters. And in the family, there was nothing, of course. I was just a part of the family. They had such a good time. The oldest son was married and had his family there. And the next son was one that my husband had taught at the training college. He was the one that was just married, and he had his bride there. She was Turkish, and she would dance for us with oud. She would do the belly dancing you've seen, you know. And she was quite a musician, a pretty girl. She went to our school, too. And only she didn't do any playing there when she was there at our school. We didn't know she could do all this. And in the evening, we'd play, we'd do dramatizations, we'd have charades, we'd have music, and play all kinds of games, and the boys would enter in, and the whole family, we had the best time. We just had a grand time in the evening, entertaining each other, you know, in the family. Four boys and three girls and myself. That was a Muslim home. And from this book, too, I get it, that it, within the family, they have a wonderful time. Mm. But, of course, the girls cannot do anything outside. The family, if the family is large and varied, you have a pretty good time. But, oh, I just think it would be terrible if you just had to do everything in the family. Oh, I couldn't. It's just unthinkable to me. So you find a good many extremes.
Mm-hmm. But in going back, you didn't feel that many changes that you could...
Well, I was visiting mostly with relatives and friends, and they were dedicating the building to my husband the last time I was there. And having commencement and pilgrims and things, and I didn't get out among the homes, you know, and didn't get to the villages. I did one thing this last time that I hadn't done before. I went to a little refugee village way up in the top of the mountains and saw a village of people that had been the village had been taken during the war and destroyed. The village had been destroyed. And they had been given this place up on the mountaintop, full of stones, and you had to go way up to get there. But they had got a start of chickens and egg growing. And I think there was something else, I don't remember what it was, but they were growing chickens up there. And they just had 500 new little chicks that had been flown from Belgium, I think. One of those little countries overseas. They had come by air, and we were there at their unloading. It was the sweetest thing to see. Those cages of chickens being passed from one. They formed a line, and they just passed these all down the line to the place that had been prepared for them. And the people were so happy to have some way of making a living. They didn't seem to mind any of the hardship they'd had to go through if they could just get on their feet and get to doing something again.
Now, at that time, at the time of your first visit, or after you came to California, had you still thought about going back?
When we left, we expected to go back. But I think that we had pretty well given up the idea. Once you get here, you know, and get in the swim of things.
So by the time you moved out to Whittier, you had no longer...
No. Oh, no, we didn't expect to go back.
Mm-hmm.
We had a hard time getting money out of there. And we never did get some out.
Mm.
We had 4,000 in the bank, and for that, we got $240. I did that after my husband passed away. I got that much. That's what it amounted to when I got it.
And
that had to be divided with the children. What?
Because the value had changed, or simply that they wouldn't allow?
Well, there were different things. There was a government charge. There was the charge of the lawyer. There was the depreciation, and they depreciated it both ways. And I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
That's just all it was. Before that, we were getting out $1,000 a month. The British were allowing us $1,000 a month, and we would have got it all out, you know, eventually.
Now, what were your activities like once you came out here to Whittier then?
Yeah. Well, I started teaching again in release time. They pounced on me right away, and I taught for several years, and then I did religious education work in the church, in the First Friends Church there for 3 years. I was director, and then after that I taught a little more in release time, but I haven't been teaching in that for 12 years, I should say. I haven't done any teaching. Active in various organizations, the United Nations, and I was active in the League of Women Voters for a while, but I had to drop out of these other things, and I even dropped out of most of my church activities.
Mm.
And when I came here because I'm interested in color. I've been working in color for about 6 years with the most remarkable woman, Mary Waddell. They had a color center in South Pasadena, and I came back and forth to that. And then they were living in the home of the wife of the bishop. The Anglican bishop, the Episcopal bishop of this area, and he has been dead for many years now. And when he died, and when she died then, and she was a part of this group, the property went into estate, and so it had to find a new center. And so the granddaughter of Mary Waddell thought of an idea of taking an apartment complex and gradually, you know, centering it in color, work of her grandmother as a memorial to her.
Mm-hmm.
She's still living. So they asked me if I would like to come, and I had been finding my house very too much, a garden and a house, you know, to keep up. And I thought, well, this may be the answer. I'll just go with them. And I won't have to go back and forth on the freeways. And so I sold my apartments in Whittier, and I sold my house. And I'm just renting an apartment here now.
Mm-hmm.
And Mary and my teacher, Miriam, lived down below me here.
I see.
And the daughter Aunt Mary lives next door down there. And little by little, others will come in. And the house, the studio, is being built down below here, and so we'll have our work centered here.
Oh, that sounds very nice.
I find that color is such an interesting subject, and I have just enjoyed working in it. It's the psychological and spiritual meaning and use of color. And it's come to mean so much to me that I thought that was a nice thing for me to do in my later time, to devote myself to something that wouldn't be quite so strenuous.
Now, are you involved with the Santa Monica Friends group then at all?
I've been over a couple of times to the meeting house here, and they have a nice little group there. The women haven't always bettered things as much as they should. I don't know whether it's because, well, I remember at the beginning, that seemed to be an end in itself, to get the vote. And at once they got the vote, they didn't continue to press for the things that they really stood for before. You know what I mean? They really should have gotten into politics and things sooner and created the revolutions that needed to be done. But things just went on sort of the same. They had the vote, and they had a certain lever there, but I don't think women really made the most of what they had at hand there.
What sort of things were you hoping would happen with the passage of suffrage?
Well, there was a lot of corruption in government, you know. Teapot Dome, scandal and all that. And I don't think there was as much difference as there should have been after the women got hold of it. For all the talk they did, you know. For all the talk we did, the things we intended to do. Well, of course, I'm as guilty as any. I went off to another place and started work all over again.
What did you think that the situation for women would change beyond the issue of the vote once they got the vote?
Yes. I thought they'd clean things up. I know when I was living in Chicago, the mayor of the town, he used to come to brothels that were right near our school. Our school was in a part of the city that had been splendid, you know. It had been the big mansions of the area, of the era. And then the colored people came in, and the people left, and the mansions became schools like this and business places and so on. And so it was all mixed up together. And I know it was quite a scandal to have his car setting out in front there. And him going to these places that we knew were what they were. And we just thought that once the women got the vote, that things like that would be cleaned up a lot, you know, that politics would be a cleaner game. I don't know.
What, did you feel that women would exert a better moral force in other
words?
Yes.
Yes.
Because I know that was a lot of the propaganda of the suffragists very often. And it's never been clear to me how many people really felt that and how much of it was propaganda.
Maybe it was propaganda.
But you personally felt that it would make a difference in terms of women being a sort of moral lever?
Yes. But I don't think the women were as anxious to get in there and do their dirty work as they kind of thought somebody would, but none of them were too keen to do it. You know what I mean? Now, when we had the programs on television of the political conventions. Did you watch those? Well, I watched both of them. Not this year, but the time before. Mm-hmm. And I was just amazed. Just amazed. We have to have the two-party system. And we need it. But other than the pictures that we were shown on television, were just devastating to me.
In what way?
You could see now the, I think it was the mayor of Chicago this time too. See, what's his name?
Daley.
What? Yes. Daley. Yes. How he was running things. Now, Chicago's always had that reputation. But I have never got deeply enough into politics to know how women could change things like that.
Did you feel that they should attempt to gain public office more than they did?
Yes, I think so. I think they should.
Did you have any expectations that the passage of the suffrage amendment would lead to generally to equality for women in the society, or did you think that was another struggle?
I thought it would lead to, towards it, yes. And I don't think I'd thought enough about the struggle that would have to come more. You never get through. And it isn't just women and men. I mean, if it were all women or if it were all men, there's still a struggle.
Mm-hmm. But you, at that time, your expectations were that, well, the suffrage will sort of solve everything, in other words.
No, I don't think I thought that far. You know how youngsters are. This is it. We need this. We'll get this. We want this. We want everything. And you don't think too far ahead.
So it was mainly viewed really as a victory without...
Yes, that's what we were out for, and we got it. Mm-hmm. Now we've got equal rights. But...
Did you view it as having equal rights or just as having the vote?
Well, we have the right to vote. We make our own government. If we can vote, we can change the government. That's the idea.
Mm-hmm. So you weren't immediately concerned then, for instance, about the Equal Rights Amendment, which was almost immediately afterwards introduced?
What's this?
The Equal Rights Amendment.
Oh. I wasn't?
That was almost immediately after passage of suffrage. And there was a group that was immediately working on that.
Oh.
Felt suffrage was not enough.
Mm. Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. Oh, I would have been interested in that, yes, Shelley. But I didn't, I wasn't active in doing anything about that.
So other than the that period in the college there, in your general interest, you had no further real activity in suffrage or in work specifically related to the position of women?
No, except the League of Women mm-hmm. Voters. But that was a carryover. And as soon as I got to Whittier, I looked that up, and they didn't have one at that time, and then no one was organized. Mm-hmm. So I was a charter member there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about Santa Monica.
There is one here. Cause
there
I
is.
I have had contact.
Well,
with
there should be. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there would be.
Did you feel that there should be a women's block after suffrage in terms of being able to exert more power as a
no,
women's block?
No, not necessarily. Although, if it's needed, they should make a block. But in politics now, they have the entree if they take advantage of it, they could they wouldn't have to have a block.
Mm-hmm.
Because our life is for all of us, and men have to live the same as women. And I think there's not so much difference between men and women as there is between people and people, man or woman. People are just different. There are nice men and there are nice women. And there are others that aren't so nice. And I think that good men, like my father, was as interested in it as we were. There are good men. There were a lot of men that were like that. And he may have been unusual for men back there. But there are, I think that women can work politically or any way with men as well as with women.
And in terms of your own ideas as a feminist, your father was really the major influence, more so than your mother.
Yes, mother didn't talk much about it. But she always got her way.
Yeah, was he involved or interested in the temperance movement, or that was...
No, father wasn't active in that. That was her thing. She was a flower mission chairman. She was state flower mission chairman. She loved flowers. She grew flowers. She had beautiful flowers. And anybody sick, they got a bouquet. And anybody died out in the country and came in to have a funeral, there weren't any flowers in town. My mother fixed everything up. Nobody ever paid her a cent. She wouldn't have thought of such a thing. She just did it. She loved it. That was her service.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other things that you'd like to add that you think we didn't cover that may be...
Well, I don't think of anything important. No, I really didn't know what sort of thing you'd want to talk about. But if you have any other questions, I thought you might be interested in this phase of it because maybe you wouldn't hear so much about the organizations in college. I haven't heard anything about any other college organization.
Well, there's been, I've talked to...
Maybe in some of the universities. Of course, I hold myself responsible, too, because I went off on my own tangent and let things to swim. I can't blame anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a disappointment in myself, really.
My teacher, Dr. Stokes, who was really a giant in her time, who helped steer this little group there. She never appeared, but she was steam back of us, and she had a big mind. And other women, Mrs. Carlette, I remember too. She had a wonderful husband who was right behind her, and she was out in the front. Oh, we owe a lot to these enlightened people who are willing to stand out. I would really like to have worked in that suffrage work that summer, although I doubt if we would have accomplished much because the ball was already set and it was going to come just that way anyway, so I doubt if anything I could have done would have, you know, been of much purpose. but it would have been interesting. The women were interesting who were working there, the women at that dinner. And this quiet friends woman who was trying to interest me in it, she was very dynamic, although she was so quiet about it. But she got me there and got me back and saw that I got the works, you know.